Welcome to the podcast of Thousand Harbors Zen, featuring talks with Cohen France. This podcast is made possible by generous donations from our listeners. To contribute or to learn more about our community, please visit thousandharborszen.com.
A few weeks ago, I asked for ideas for talks, and someone raised the question of what is the difference between mindfulness and concentration? And so I've had that going in the back of my head. And then a few weeks ago also, I started watching a TV show, Superman and Lois, with my kids. And I was watching the other night, and this question came back, and I thought, well, Superman's an interesting way to talk about this question. Interesting for me, anyway, because I like Superman so much. There's a recurring story, but often when the story of Superman is told, we learn a little bit about his childhood, and we get to see these glimpses of how he started to reckon with these powers that were appearing in his life. And one that manifests in a particularly painful way is his super hearing. He can hear everything. He can hear things that are happening next door. He can hear things in some tellings of it that are happening a city away. It's a cacophony, and it's overwhelming and it's painful for him. And so as a child, he needs to learn to concentrate, right? He needs to learn to focus on one thing. And it seems that often the way the story is told, he learns to focus on one sound at a time. Out of this chaos, he chooses one noise or one voice. And in doing so, is able to ground himself, is able to find some sort of, if not peace, some sort of stability in the middle of this thing that is always happening. He can't turn it off. He can only change his relationship to it in the moment. That's concentration, right? But then there's this other really critical part of who Superman is, which is that he'll go up into the sky, he'll go just to the edges of our atmosphere, and there, kind of floating in space, he'll let it all in. He'll let go of the concentration, he'll let go of the one thing, and he'll take in all the sounds. And he hears all the cries. He hears all of the accidents about to happen, you know, the screeching tires. And from that, he chooses one, and he goes back. Most Buddhist traditions share a vocabulary for this, and I'm playing a little fast and loose with these terms, but concentration is usually referred to as shamatha practice. And we can learn shamatha in various ways. In Zen, if it's taught at all, it's usually through counting the breath or through some sort of breath awareness. It might also come through just counting, period, but usually it's tacked to the breath in some way. So, for example, when I was first taught to sit in Zazen, I was taught that I inhale, and as I exhale, I think one. I inhale again, and as I exhale, I think two. And I do this up to 10, and then I go back to one. If I lose track along the way, I just go back to one. And I do lose track along the way, because it is a concentration exercise. It's the simplest thing, but it's actually quite hard, in part because we're doing it in slow motion, right? We're breathing slowly, and we're asked to hold on to this number one for a long time, and this number two for a long time. And so we go into it thinking, this is silly. And then we leave, and we realize that concentration, even without distraction, external distraction, is quite hard. Why? Because there's so much distraction already. There's an unbelievable level of noise. Right? We're all experiencing it all the time. We're talking to ourselves all the time. We're holding what we're about to do, and a memory, and a vague feeling, and the work that we didn't get done. All of these things are kind of shouting at us. And we learn to function within that. We learn to do the dishes and we learn to cook dinner and we learn to drive. But with varying degrees of skill in terms of relating to that noise as it's happening. And the fact is that it can sometimes become overwhelming. And then on the other side, there's this what we call vipassana, which is like a spacious awareness. It's letting all the things in as opposed to choosing one. It's a kind of, there's a vulnerability to that, right? We aren't protecting ourselves. We aren't saying, it's going to feel like this, or I'm going to rest my gaze on this. All the things that are happening, all those voices, all those sounds are going to enter simultaneously, and we're going to let that be as it is, without judgment and without trying to shape it. Right? So these two things, these two practices go hand in hand. They're not in tension with one another, but they're treated quite differently. And it's often the case that shamatha is taught early as a preliminary tool, but it doesn't have to be that way. Some people go to vipassana directly, some people are taught this them at the same time. And again, I'm using these in very broad ways. I watch Superman, young Superman, and then the kind of mature Superman who knows what he's doing. And I become really interested in this balance. What do we do with these things? And why? Why does Superman have to learn concentration in the first place? He has to learn concentration because the world is overwhelming. He has to learn concentration because without it, he'll go insane. His basic state is to be completely receptive to everything, which, you know, we use that kind of language in this practice. We talk about that receptivity. We talk about that vulnerability as if it's a positive thing, as if it's something to aspire to. But then here's this story of a boy who can't control it. He can't choose the vulnerability, and it tears him apart, and he has to find another way. A question I get asked a lot is Zazen okay if you're suffering from depression, for example, or should you not do it? It's always a hard question. I don't think there's a simple answer necessarily, or an answer that addresses everyone's circumstances. But often, the careful answer will be to say, don't sit, don't do Zazen. And the reason is because we associate Zazen with this spacious awareness, with more of the Vipassana side. And that can be overwhelming. It can feel like too much, especially if the noise in your head is already negative, if it's despondent, if it's critical. Giving an open space for that cacophony is maybe not beneficial. So we'll say, wait, do something else. But another response, another possible response would be, yes, meditate, but take up the concentration side, right? Instead of letting everything in, instead of practicing non-discrimination, practice discrimination. There's the counting of the breath, there's the observance of the breath. Some traditions, you'll watch a flame. It's not that you're thinking anything in particular about it. You're just staying with it, nothing but it. In some, there's a syllable that's actually written out, and you write it and you put it on a little stand in front of you so that it's where your eyes fall. And you just stay with that one character, that one syllable. And when you break concentration, when you can't do it anymore, you get up and you walk around so that you never develop the habit of slipping away. It's a powerful thing to do. And in Zen, we don't take it up as a practice in itself. But you can, and it has value. We also don't take up the Vipassana side as a practice in itself. Not exactly. We talk about being spacious. We talk about being receptive. We talk about being vulnerable or raw. We talk about holding all beings within our field. But the fact is, in this posture, in this ritual enactment of meditation, we are also told that we should hold our hands just like so, and our eyes just like so, and our shoulders like so, and our back like so, and that we should never forget that these are the things that we're doing. So we don't get swept away either. We have these points of grounding. We're being held down in that great swirl of noise and thoughts. So the Chan teacher Guo Gu, he speaks very eloquently to the argument that Zazen is doing both at the same time. We're doing shamatha and we're doing vipassana, and we're doing them simultaneously, anchoring ourselves so that we can be present in that way, so that we can be receptive in that way. But again, just because that's what this practice looks like, it doesn't mean you can't explore them individually. There's a heartbreaking side for me to watching this played out through the character of Superman. Right? His reality, and it speaks so well to the story of the Bodhisattva, is that he is never not aware of the suffering of others. He has to choose not to be, or he has to choose to focus on one. Otherwise, naturally, he hears all of it. And that means that when he's in that spacious place, he can't stay there because he has to make a choice. Out of a universe of suffering, out of billions of voices, he has to choose one. And he flies down from the edge of the atmosphere to that person and tries to help. And then he can come back and he can do another and another. And it seems so heroic. And yet at the same time, if you're him, you understand that in the time it took you to save that person, you lost another. Every time he has a conversation with someone on the street, someone dies who he could have saved, and he knows it. I find that so moving, and I think about it in terms of this practice, what we think of as in terms of the path of the Bodhisattva, and the painful reality that not only do we not have the resources of Superman, not only are we not able to immediately and skillfully respond, but even then, we can sit and we can know the pain of the world and still have to make choices from this limited capacity. We go into that big space where we feel that collective pain, and then we come back and we choose something because we have to. We make that our work. We do the best we can with it, knowing that there's so much that we're not doing at the same time, knowing that so much is left untouched. We can't take care of the whole world. And so instead, we take care of what we can, and we take care of this moment, which is the last thing that I wanted to mention. Because the original question was, what's the difference between concentration and mindfulness? I've talked about the difference between concentration and this open space. Mindfulness is the thing in the middle. Mindfulness is the way that we move through an ordinary activity, not one of perfect concentration, not one of total receptivity, but incorporating what we can from both. I think about, when Superman picks up a cup of coffee, he's holding it the way that you or I would hold a butterfly so that we don't damage its wings. He has to do it with such care and such intention just so that he doesn't destroy it. That's what mindfulness is. It's the way we pick up that cup, which in one way is an act of concentration, because we choose it. It's not done over here while we talk to someone else. We look at it. We decide how we're going to hold it in our hands. And we do this with an understanding, again, of all the things we can't do, the many, many things to which we can't in that moment offer care. So we offer care to this thing in front of us, this cup of coffee, this person, this set of keys, this steering wheel, this step. Never losing these two threads, never losing the thing that is keeping us grounded and sane, and never losing that other awareness that not only gives us purpose, but keeps us honest in relationship to the cries of the world. Anyway, that's what I saw when I was watching Superman. I thought I'd mention it. That's where I'll stop.
You have been listening to a Thousand Harbors Zen podcast. Please visit thousandharborszen.com.